Hi, and welcome to another edition of Visions with Me. Good morning, good afternoon, good night, wherever you are in the world. Let me continue to say Happy New Year, all the best, good health, prosperity. And today, we are exploring a different topic where we will look at mental health, love, compassion, how do we care for those who cannot speak up for themselves, and we're going to be focusing a bit about animals, right? So today, I'm deeply honored to have in the studio with me, Gail Hunt, a Barbadian woman who absolutely loves animals. She sees them as healers. She sees them as companions. And we're going to explore all of this and a bit more with Gail Hunt. Welcome to Visions, Gail.
Thank you so much, User Lee. I'm very happy to be on the show. And hi to everybody in Barbados. And I hope your new year has started well.
It has indeed. I'm excited to be alive. I'm happy to be alive. So, yeah. Yes. So, Gail, take us back to the beginning when you first realized that you had a deep love for animals. And what animal first captured your heart? Was it the dog? Was it cats? What?
I developed my love for animals in childhood. And it's interesting because initially when I was growing up, we didn't have animals. But I still found myself very connected to nature, birds, cats, dogs. And I can't say it was a particular animal, but I just knew there was something special about them. So it began in my childhood and it's just continued to grow throughout my adult life, really.
Mm-hmm. So then you said you didn't really grow up with animals, but what type of views did your family members have, your mother, you know, whoever was in your household? What were their thoughts around animals and did that influence you in any way?
Well, there was a disconnect, to be honest. Animals were seen as just animals, not really part of the family or connected with the family in that kind of way. But I grew up in the UK, so when I was with my friends and visited my friends' homes, I saw that they had relationships with their animals. The animals were actually part of the family, and I saw how happy, you know, their animals made them. So I eventually, as I got older in my teenage years, was able to convince my grandmother who raised me if we could have a cat. And it's interesting how that came about is that I used to feed this cat. It wasn't mine, but I started feeding it. I used to come into the garden and I would put down some water and some food that we had, whatever was available. And at first, my grandmother was, you know, shooing it away. And, you know, child, what are you doing bringing this cat here? And we don't want that cat right here, germs and blah, blah. But eventually, she started to find the cat comforting as well. And to cut a long story short, we adopted this cat. And her name was Smudge. And she lived until she was about 17. We had her for a long time. So after that, my family started to also, like me, begin to love animals and see how they could provide comfort, especially after a weary day.
Okay. So tell us now, Gail, how your love for animals has maybe shaped your attitudes around patience, compassion, love for fellow man. How would you say that has shaped you?
Well, in Barbados, some people may know me as a person that's involved in animal advocacy through my charity, Action for Animals Barbados. But before that, and also still now, I'm involved also very much with the disability movement in Barbados. I'm not deeply heavily involved, but I volunteer with the National United Society for the Blind in Barbados. I work with the Phoenix Performers, a mixed special disability group who have performed at NIFGA. And back in the UK, I also, again, was involved with helping persons with disabilities, particularly those with learning difficulties. I've done special needs teaching and so forth. So as well as having a love for animals, I've also always had a love for the vulnerable, you know, and that also extends to the elderly. I've worked with the elderly as well. So providing emotional support and, you know, residential social work care and things like that.
Okay. You mentioned your advocacy and animal rights. Do you think Barbadians understand animal rights? And can you explain what is animal rights?
Yeah, sure. I'll do my best. I'm not an expert. There's a lot of persons that are probably more qualified than me on this topic, but there's a distinction between animal rights and animal welfare. So when we're looking at animal rights, we're going very deep into it. This is where people become vegans. They begin to kind of like really advocate hard on the fact that animals are sentient. Therefore, people shouldn't just not abuse and harm them, but we shouldn't be eating them, using them in cosmetics, in experiments, you know, medical research, anything, in the same way that you wouldn't a human. So they say, if you could equate animal rights the same as human rights. Mm-hmm. Whereas animal welfare now is more looking at the well-being of the animal. So it's not much so much saying a person shouldn't eat meat, but a person who's involved in animal welfare would look at perhaps the conditions in which the animal is being raised, how it's being transported, how it's receiving medical care as and when needed. And I'm referring specifically to livestock. Animal welfare will also look at how dogs are kept, how cats are kept. Again, are they kept in good conditions? Are they receiving adequate nutrition? Are their medical needs being looked at? And this would extend for all animals. So I just wanted to make that distinction between animal welfare and animal rights. I hope that explains it somewhat for you.
Yes, yes. I remember many years ago going to the UK. Mm-hmm. And at the time, my sister had animals. Well, she had cats, particularly, and dogs. And I remember one of her cats became ill, and she took it to the veterinarian hospital for animals. And it was like paying at that time £100 just for one injection. And it was like, wow.
Yeah.
Because in Barbados, even now, I don't think we have that high level of awareness around animal welfare and animal rights.
That's right. We're getting better, you know, thanks to the tireless work, I would say, of many animal sanctuaries and animal welfare groups. There's more being done in terms of educating the public on, you know, basic care of taking care of animals, taking care of livestock and so forth. Mm-hmm. And the vets also play their part as well, because if a person comes in once with their dog, the vet now has an opportunity to establish and build a relationship with that person, you know, to say, well, look, you know, we look forward to seeing you in 6 months' time. We look forward to seeing you in a year's time. The reason why you need to come back is, you know, and that helps to get persons now to form a habit whereby they now kind of incorporate the welfare and care of the animal. They normalize it. And that's how we develop on the island, really, mm-hmm. animal welfare, by all of us working collaboratively and communicating, educating. Yeah.
Okay. So, Gail, let's switch a little, because we've just talked about the welfare rights. How do we care for our animals? Let's look now at these animals being used in service as therapeutic service animals, as guide dogs for the blind, and so on. What are your thoughts generally around this concept of using dogs, cats, and in other countries, I've read that they use other animals as well, therapeutically, like horses to help those who have been injured and so on. What are your thoughts, and how do you think in Barbados this can be developed to really help many of our people with mental illnesses and, as I pointed out, like guide dogs for the blind?
Right. Yeah. Thank you for asking that question. That's really, really important. So I would begin by saying that persons working with animals and building bonds in relationship with animals and being helped by animals is nothing new for the 21st century. It's been going on for a very, very long time. But what's happened over recent years globally is that it's now kind of being researched. It's now mm-hmm. being legislated. There's now policies being put into place, and there's now categorizations, which helps then persons and governments to kind of regulate it and establish it as they see fit based on the needs of their communities and societies. So I just wanted to establish that first of all. For me, animals are absolutely wonderful to help people in various different ways. They can provide emotional support. They can provide our limbic system connections. That is the interaction where the animal activates the limbic system. That's the part of the brain that's responsible for our emotions, memory, and bonding. So basically, animals can help regulate our moods and reduce our fear and anxiety by, you know, regulating our limbic system. So they also can improve mental health by helping to ease symptoms of depression, post-traumatic stress disorder, PTSD, anxiety. They also can help persons with disabilities, as you mentioned, in terms of being sightseeing dogs. Some people call them guide dogs for the blind. So if you're a person that's visually impaired and you work, or you want to work, or you want to have an active, busy life, some persons are totally independent. They may want to use a cane, but another person may feel more confident, you know, and comfortable with a dog that's been specifically trained to help them negotiate walking about in public. Because these dogs are highly trained from puppies. They're selected from puppies. The good ones are, you know, developed further and they become sightseeing dogs. So we also have animals such as horses that also provide therapy. They provide therapy in different ways. Horses can, again, with the limbic system, help us to emotionally regulate our nervous system because horses can mirror our feelings and emotions. So some people are scared of horses because they're very big, but it's not about their size. It's about the energy that they're giving you, and it's reciprocated. They can also help children who have like a physical disability. And I know in Barbados that does happen with the learning. Is it the learning development school or the learning center in Barbados? They have equine therapy there where the children, the special needs children, get the opportunity to ride the horses. You know, obviously, there's somebody there with them holding the horses' reins and they're fully supported, but it helps them with their mobility. And you can imagine how much confidence that's going to build in a child as well.
Yes.
You can just think about it, you know, it's going to make them feel absolutely empowered. And they also help the elderly because they help reduce social isolation. They can also support memory recall. They can encourage gentle movement. You know, an elderly person can walk their dog, for example, even just around the garden. I mean, I could go on. They can do so much. We know about veterans and how, you know, dogs help with PTSD, which is the post-traumatic stress disorder. They also can help with trauma recovery. And there's so much evidence with like cats, for example, that when a cat purrs, that they emit a frequency. I don't know what the frequency is in terms of hertz, but they emit a frequency that actually can help, again, to regulate the nervous system and also produce healing within the body. And there's scientific data to back this up.
Oh, nice. And I think based on all of what you're saying and what I have read and watched on various documentaries, I think, you know, we have not seriously explored having animals as service animals, therapeutic animals to assist persons with various health challenges, particularly the mental illnesses, the emotional trauma that some people experience, maybe through a car accident, domestic violence, gender-based violence, and so on. And I think that I'm happy to have this conversation with you so that Barbadians can start thinking a bit differently and seriously exploring the possibility of using service animals to help with the emotional balance. And I mean, you're talking about children, Gail, but one of the other vulnerable groups that I think we also can look at or explore helping are our young men.
Yeah.
They need some stability, some emotional balance.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, if you look now at the prisons, for example, in the US and also in the UK, animals are being used more and more as part of the rehabilitation of the inmates. When you're starting to care for something that's far more vulnerable than yourself, it brings out a different part of your humanness. That's one thing. But also, again, when we go back again to this resonance, you know, how it helps to regulate the emotional, the central nervous system and things like that, is that side of it also. And to speak with our young men here in Barbados, you know, there's a lot of guys now that are really beginning to really want to have dogs, you know, and do things with dogs. We've got hiking groups, you know, we've got an organization in Barbados that does hiking. And you should see the number of young men and older men as well. They're actually doing it because it's a form of exercise. It's a form of bonding with other people. But also in this stressful world that we're living, it helps to regulate us. It helps us with our mental health, you know, it helps to stabilize us. So if we take that one further and then develop programs specifically geared to young people that involve animals, I know the Nature Fund Ranch does this with horses. If we had other organizations that started to do this in a conscientious way, then I think that the results would speak for themselves.
You know, Gail, as we are having this continued conversation, I am reflecting on a period like back in the 60s, 70s, and I would think the early part of the 80s, where many Barbadian children would have grown up having to care for animals. Most families back in, I would even venture to say, probably the 50s, would have been raising animals for home consumption as well. And as you are pointing out, not knowing the scientific and other reasoning behind a lot of what took place, but having to care for animals primarily before you went off to school. So you had to feed the chickens, you had to go and, to use an old-time Bayesian parlance, stake out the cows and the sheep and the goats. So I think all of that was therapy for many of us growing up back in that period, not fully comprehending how it was helping to keep us balanced and also helping us to develop discipline and other important, you know, tasks.
That's so true. So
as we continue the conversation, Gail, now let's look at the guide dogs. As you pointed out earlier, guide dogs or CNI dogs are used by persons who are blind and visually impaired to navigate their surroundings. They're trained to really work with the blind and visually impaired. But I'm sure there's more to it than that, because when the blind person acquires this guide dog, then they also have to provide care for that dog. So speak to us in terms of what is involved in that caring process, you know, having the correct nutritious food, shampooing the dog, I almost said baby.
Well, just what you were saying as well, before we get into that, about back in the 50s and beforehand, it's very true. You know, even my family, my mom tells me about when she used to take care of the sheep and the chickens and all that kind of stuff. So definitely, I think that's something that we need to bring back for young people, you know, to let them be around livestock and farm animals. And for anybody that is a farmer, to let the children come and learn about what's involved in the process of raising healthy livestock, because it gives them a sense of connection. And also it reduces that fear and anxiety around different types of animals. Going back to the guide dogs, I'm not an expert, again, I'm going to say this, but the little bit that I know is that what happens is the dog is matched with the person. So they try to find a dog that's going to suit this person's lifestyle. That's a really important thing that happens. And then also the person is then trained, because it's not just the dog that's trained, the person who's visually impaired now has to get used to trusting, because you're now putting your faith in an animal to cross a very busy road, to get on a bus, if you live in a city, maybe a train, on aeroplanes. You know, these dogs actually become your sidekick. They're with you all the time, you know, even when you're sleeping, probably they're still with you. So you have to develop a very close bond. So that's one of the first stages, building trust. The dog gets to know you, to learn you, to trust you, and vice versa. And then you start to go out in public, and again, you will be trained how to walk and how to use the harness, because the dog has to wear a special harness, which lets people know that this is a service animal one. And it also lets the dog know, once that dog has the harness on, it's no longer a dog, it's now a working dog, it's got a job to do. When the harness comes off, it can roll on its back, it can roll in the mud, it can run around and play with toys. But when the harness is on, that dog knows that this is it, we're now working. Mm-hmm. So in terms of now a person taking care of a dog, it's pretty much the same as how they would take care of themselves. So, you know, you as a visually impaired person will know where you set out things. So you'll have an area where the dog eats, the food will be put in a certain container in a certain place. You'll have your brushes, you know. So you would just kind of get into the habit of taking care of your dog to suit your needs. And I guess, again, you can get guidance from friends, from professional service dog trainers on the best things, you know, that you need to be doing with your dog, particularly when they're not working. I think this is quite important because dogs need to be dogs as well. They can't just be 24 hours in that service mode. They too need to kind of like regulate themselves, have downtime. So it's important for the person that's visually impaired to know how to interact with their dog in a social way, you know, like listening to the radio, relaxing, having a cup of tea. The dog knows the harness is not on, it can relax a little bit. But then they will signal to the dog when they're ready to go out. You know, they will use a command, whatever it is. The dog would know to stand, come to them, put the harness on, and then they go about their business, or whatever that may be.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have seen blind people walking with the guide dogs. And I must say that they are pretty impressive in navigating traffic, navigating situations where they're able to guide the blind person around traffic, around vehicles, and out of situations that can also be considered dangerous to that blind person.
Yeah.
So the service animals really does help in terms of restoring some dignity and independence to that individual who's blind or visually impaired.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, Gail, as we talk about this, one of the things that could be of a big concern to you and other animal lovers is our culture towards animals, particularly towards dogs. And if we're talking about having dogs as service animals, how do you suggest that we work at changing the culture where Barbadians become a bit more open and accepting of dogs as, you know, part of our society?
Yeah, I think it begins with our government, you know, our government, who are part of the United Nations Convention of the Rights of Persons with Disabilities, fully enacting that. And what does that look like in action? So, for example, if I was a visually impaired person and I wanted to have, you know, full independence, I love animals, I wanted a service dog, then I should be able to walk about Barbados with my service dog. But it can't happen just like that. So the government then would have to do a sensitization educational program, you know, to say that this is what's coming. You know, we're now looking at providing more independence for persons who are visually impaired. This is what it's going to look like. You're going to see more persons who are visually impaired with their dogs in public. You know, then businesses have to be involved as well, because the businesses have got to allow persons who want to go into a supermarket, who want to go into a dress shop, shoe shop, hardware shop, to be able to go in there with their service dog and not be stopped. Because as you rightly said, it's about dignity and independence, and not be stopped and say, well, you can't come in with that dog, you know? And once the government, the businesses start to work with persons like the Barbados Council for the Disabled, BARNOD, and, you know, roll out programs and policies and then educate the public at the same time, I can see it being very, very effective, because it's not a kind of difficult thing. You know, these dogs are not going to go into a shop, for example, and start lunging and pulling at people. They're not going to go into a shop and start barking at people. They're not going to cock their leg to pee, to stool. You know, these are highly trained dogs. And like I said, once they have that harness on, they know that they're performing a duty. So most persons who are visually impaired don't even want you to touch their dog, you know? The dog is an extension of them. So it's not a case of, oh my God, look at that dog. It's, oh my God, look at that person with their dog. Because the service dog is an extension of them, but it allows them to go about their business, to do what, even to go to work, to go to college, to go to university, to do whatever it is that they need to do, feeling comfortable that they have an animal that's going to guide them through the different, you know, things that they need help with, crossing busy roads, whatever it may be.
Right. Well, I think as we have been discussing, Gail, we need to have many of the professionals join with this campaign to have service animals in there to support persons with mental illnesses and vision loss, particularly those with mental health challenges, because there's a lot of stigma attached to mental illnesses. And I think having service animals will also help in reducing that stigma, as you correctly pointed out earlier, help the individuals to regain some balance emotionally and mentally so that they're able to really function within our society and continue to contribute.
Yeah. So we also, as well as the service animals, we also have medical alert dogs, and we also have emotional assisted therapy animals as well. For example, the emotional support animals can help people with mental illness, because just having that animal with them can help them to feel calm and feel safe. And some persons who are not affected by mental illness may think, well, why does anybody need a dog or anything to make them feel calm? Why can't they just take some pills, or why can't they just see a therapist? But again, animals mirror us. You know, they were created for a reason. You know, they're put on this planet for a reason. And one of the reasons is that they work very well with humans.
Right.
And then when you look at medical alert dogs now, we have dogs, and not just dogs, cats as well, that can detect cancer, tumors. You know, many people have had their life saved because their animal was able to detect a tumor in them. A dog can let a person know when they're going to have an epileptic seizure. They can let a person know when they're about to have a panic attack. So if you're somebody who has epilepsy, and your dog, you know, whatever way it does, sometimes they lean, they may put their paw on, you know, because they're trained to do this. So they may put their paw on the person. That person now knows, okay, my brain waves are changing. I'm about to have a seizure. Let me sit down. Let me let somebody around me know that I'm about to have a seizure. So when you look at it, there's more reasons to incorporate animals within our society, not just as pets. And that's another topic in itself. Just the joy of having animals as pets. But just in terms of like emotional support, our service animals, whether or not they're detecting bombs, even rats are used, you know, to detect landmines and things like that. So right through to a dog walking with you through the supermarket, or a child riding a horse and feeling confident. There's some children who have not spoken due to their severe autism, and when introduced to an animal in a therapeutic setting, the child again is able to build trust. The animal's not going to be judging. The animal's not thinking, why aren't you speaking? Why are you so strange? Why are you so different? The animal's just going to be providing that emotional grounding for the child, and that makes the child feel safe. And when the child begins to feel safe, then they think, I'm going to open up a little bit. So some children that I've never spoken have, after therapy, started using words and using language. They help with neurological disorders, you know, in terms of, again, helping people feel comfortable enough to open up. And this is really what we want.
Right, definitely. So, Gail, tell us what keeps you motivated, because this is definitely one of those difficult areas within our community when the majority of Barbadians are not animal lovers.
What keeps me motivated is God. I'm going to bring God into the conversation. God made us caretakers of the planet, and he created everything that we have in terms of nature and animals. God created. So therefore, if we dislike animals and dislike the things around us, it's kind of like disliking God's creation. And it doesn't mean that everybody has to go that deep with it. You don't have to love animals, but you don't have to harm them neither. You know, you can respect them at a distance. You don't have to have a cat. You don't have to have a dog, but you can respect them. But for me, what motivates me is my calling in life, which I feel is to kind of help people. You know, I'm a humanitarian, as I mentioned, and also an strong animal welfare advocate, because I know that when we bring animals and people together, wonderful things happen.
Definitely.
And and in our society now, more people are beginning to realize this, you know, with the growth in social media and how we see these big changes, like, you know, people at their fashion shows are no longer using fur. You know, they're reducing animal experiments. They're now beginning to look, even in Korea, they're now looking at not using dog meat anymore, because the younger generations that are coming up are beginning to recognize animals as sentient. In other words, that means they have feelings and emotions. So therefore, if animals have feelings and emotions, why should we be abusing them? But something very important I wanted to touch on as well is that sometimes how we treat others, including animals and other people, is a reflection of how we feel about ourselves. So when you see somebody being abusive to another person or an animal, it's often because that person has trauma and it manifests itself through neglect. So if you can't take care of yourself and love yourself, it's very difficult to love another person. And even less likely that you're going to be able to love an animal. You may get an animal because you see your neighbors have one, but then you can't actually follow it through. It's like, I want a car because my neighbor's got a car, but I've not learned to drive. Yes. I never learned how to do it. So it's very deep. We are dealing with, you know, years of cultural norms and things around animals, but it is changing, thankfully. And we just need to keep advocating, and I'm one of many people on the island that's doing this.
Wonderful. So Gail Hunt, I want to say thank you so much for sharing with us today. It indeed has been very informative and enlightening, allowing us to continue to foster and change the culture towards animals in Barbados.
Thank you so much indeed today. I really appreciate speaking with you. And I hope that something that I've said has been helpful and inspirational. And I'm loving seeing people walking their dogs. So continue to do that and just love and care for your animals.
Yes, definitely. Thank you.
Thank you.
Remember, you can reach me on 1246-269-9660 or 1246-430-7300. You can email me, visionsbarbados@gmail.com. And you can listen to this and past episodes by going to vob929.com website. So until next week, do take care of yourself, love yourself, and love your neighbor.